Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. We've taken a little hiatus on talking about the Clone Wars Report as we covered Mandalorian and got through the holidays, and I was so excited to see how refreshed Ken would be on his ability to do some nice trumpets and sound effects with his mouth for the Clone Wars Report, and I was not disappointed at all. Anyway, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and trumpet man is Ken Knapsack, right?
I'm here. Yeah, you know, not a refreshing week that we're recording this in, but I feel refreshed about the Clone Wars and the Clone Wars Report. It was fun to get back in.
Yeah, absolutely. We discussed the whole first season. We are discussing basically this sort of the storyline. So if it's a single episode, we discuss that. If it's a three episode arc, we discuss that. And we did that whole first season. Now we're diving into the second season. with a 3-episode arc. We are discussing the Holocron heist, which is season 2, episode 1, written by Paul Dini, directed by Justin Ridge. Then Cargo of Doom, written by George Christick, directed by Rob Coleman. And then Children of the Force, written by Henry Gilroy, directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. Ken, we are heading into the part of the Clone Wars where it's, I think, quite wise to check that chronological watch order, because this is where it gets just bonkers with how everything jumps around. And I do think that it's valuable to watch them in the chronological order rather than the release order, because a lot of things just track more, make more sense. I think you can get more out of the story. And the reason I say all that is because it's significant that this kickoff to season 2 is, these are the 3 episodes that are in chronological order, but this is also broadcast order. These are the first 3 episodes of season 2. So it's interesting for me as we discuss this, Ken, to talk about all the stuff we normally do about what's going on in the episodes and all the Star Wars of it. But also just knowing that, you know, the Clone Wars is rolling on and this is how they decided to kick off season 2, right?
Yeah, a big start to the season. And of course, the broadcast order had Cad Bane kind of making a debut at the end of season 1, right? Which is significant and confusing. And this is why we're doing it. I think there's great value. We keep saying that because it's just continues to reward me personally as someone who never did the chronological rewatch, never did till this show. And you get a lot out of it. But this is the first time where I'm kind of like, I'd like to discuss which debut of Cad Bane was better. But we'll get to that. Yeah, you're right. It was. It's also comforting to go, okay, oh, this is as I saw it too. So season 2, and then the show just gets bigger too. You can see right away, and there's, I love watching those little featurettes. StarWars.com has them buried in their archives. If you go to Wikipedia, and then you can link to like the old backup links where Kristen Baver went through every episode, and they have episode guides. We refer to them a lot here on Clone Wars Report, but some great ones with Filoni for this arc. And one of them is just, he's just saying like, this is season 2. Look at what we can do and look where we could go. And it was very confusing for the production team to be like, 9 planets. And you immediately start to feel the benefits of a bigger season, more confidence, even a bigger budget. And I love that about this.
Yeah. Great point about how in broadcast order we had seen Cad Bane, but just watching them in chronological order, if you didn't know that, this is this big introduction in chronological order to this new villain, which is really sort of expanding the slate of villains. The first season, we've really got a lot of characters that we're familiar with Dooku and Grievous, and, you know, people already knew Asajj Ventress. So Cad Bane feels like this big introduction. And then, just the expanse of both ideas and locations is very clear in these 3 episodes. So before we dive in, I got my summary here that I wrote up for these 3 episodes. So here we go. Here's a summary, best of my ability. Enter Cad Bane. The deadly Duros bounty hunter is hired for a heist. The devious Darth Sidious sends Bane to steal a holocron from the Jedi Temple. Despite the odds, Bane's infiltration and subterfuge succeeds. The befuddled Jedi send Anakin Skywalker and Ahsoka Tano to intercept Cad Bane before he can kidnap Jedi Master Bola Ropal, who holds the key Kyber crystal that can unlock the holocron. The Jedi fail to stop that, too. Master Ropal dies, and Bane uses Ahsoka as a hostage to convince Anakin to open the holocron. Bane then uses the information on the holocron to kidnap 4 sensitive children who could become the Jedi of the future. He delivers them to a secret facility on Mustafar, where Sidious schemes to enslave the children and use them as a Force-sensitive spy network. Through patience and precision, Anakin and Ahsoka finally rescue the children. But did they learn any lessons? Let's discuss.
Thank you.
I had fun with that one. There's a lot of alliteration to be had in a lot of Jedi failure. We already talked a little bit about this as the premiere of the second season, but Ken, what was your overall reaction to this as a part of the grand Star Wars story? Did you love these episodes, like them, struggle with them?
Yeah, I really love it. And I'll start, I touched on it already, but I this one makes great sense. Storyline-wise, release-wise, you can see, again, when you lay it down on the map, like the chronological order really works. I do personally love the debut of Cad Bane on television a little bit more. I thought it was slightly more effective and more interesting and just compelling. That said, Cad Bane absolutely emerges as one of the best additions in Star Wars. You mentioned it. New villain. and it's via the Clone Wars. And this is the first time, because remember, Ahsoka's shown up, met with some resistance by fans. Believe it or not, back in the day, kids, Cad Bane shows up, and I still believe in my heart that he shouldn't have worked. I look at him, and I love Duros isn't the problem, but I look at him, at the great voice, but even you hear the voice, the gun, the duster, the cowboy hat, I'm like, it's comical, yet it's, he's threatening, he's compelling, he's different, he's new, and it works, and that's the thing I love about this arc more than anything. I do love Coruscant as a location. I love that this gets into where we're going to discuss Palpatine's bigger desires and what's lurking beneath it all. There's some great stuff in here, including the return to planets that are important. And so that's the legacy of this arc for me. Whenever you watch it, it really just makes Cad Bane what he is, a popular character. You kind of, even though it's always weird, we root for the villain sometimes in our hearts, not rooting for him to win, but you're just rooting to watch him, rooting to, you want him to lose, I guess. And that's a good thing. So it's a valuable thing to the story. So that's what I take from these episodes.
Yeah. Great, great thoughts on Cad Bane. It is hard not to discuss the Cad Bane of it all is the main idea in these three episodes, because I got to go and rewatch that first season episode with just that mindset of which is a better introduction for me in some ways, I think, because I was watching them in a real analytical mind space while still having fun. Like Cad Bane, I liked him maybe the most I ever have. He made the most sense to me. And I think it's partially because what you're saying is he is one of these characters that I've never heard anybody, and I'm sure they're out there, but I've never heard anybody who dislikes Cad Bane, right? He is obviously a fan of people who grew up with the Clone Wars. For people of our generation who kind of want less wacky and more, you know, badass sometimes, that Cad Bane really fit that. But you're right. He's just weird. And in this perfect Star Wars way that he is, I think this is what I liked about his introduction. Seeing him in this episode, right, leaning up in some Coruscant hovel, staring out at the dark city, with those the shadows of those blinds, those shades casting down upon him. He is this mix of, you know, absolutely science fiction. Duros is one of the most just, like, you could see them on a flying saucer aliens that Star Wars has to offer. But he's got the weird, almost like kind of steampunky pipes in his cheeks. He's totally Western with the hat and the duster and the, you know, the toothpick, you know, in his lip. But then that image of him right there, that first image, is just drenched in noir. And he's like, he is this, to me, this collection of, if Star Wars gets part of its strength by being a fantasy, by being mythology, but then within that, just grabbing from every other genre and pushing it through the Star Wars filter, he is like at least three genres in one. And that weird voice with its kind of got an accent, kind of has that, you know, reverb that's clearly like, you know, that's not just a natural human voice, is so cool and badass. So just the look of him, just the idea of him, is this great genre mashup. And then these three episodes, I've got some thoughts that we can discuss about this. They go to effort to show you why Cad Bane is being successful. It's not just that he's being successful because he's one of the baddest bounty hunters that there is in the galaxy. There's a reason that he is a badass, and there's a reason that he can take it to the Jedi, and these episodes show that. So I really love it for that. Yeah. Other overall reaction to this arc is I just love that it's a ton of Jedi lore, you know, spending more time in the archives, more time with Jocasta Nu and fake Jocasta Nu, spending really a lot of quality time with the holocrons and really sort of elevating the myth of them and the meditating to find younglings and peeking into that Jedi process. And, you know, Palpatine's plan being one of the kind of weirder, darker ones, and ones that I think as Star Wars fans, we don't have reason to discuss as much, but it's really fascinating. So it's got a ton of Jedi, you know, Sith lore. Plus, you know, I've been talking about adventure serials a lot lately. This arc is pretty close to having actual cliffhangers. Like, they still have the end of the episode, still have that, like, really classic, let's pull out and look at a tableau of our characters and peacefully. It's not like the dun dun dun, you know, what will happen. But there isn't an effort to resolve it. It's just like, oh yeah, hey, he escaped, and now he's going after Jedi Master Bowler Paul. And the next one is, oh no, he's got it all. Things aren't going great. Or rather, we know that he is lurking there. That's a real cliffhanger that we know he is hiding in, as a clone trooper, but the Jedi don't. So I like the actual cliffhanger vibe of it as well. And then the final thing for me, big overall reaction, is this whole thing is a bit of a prequel to the Fallen Order video game, right?
Yeah, absolutely it is. It touches on some stuff we eventually see in Rebels as well. When you look back and you go, oh yeah, look at that. Yeah. And also these three, you know, combine 20 plus minutes each, 22, 24 minutes each. You got yourself a nice mini movie, man. This takes you places. And when you watch it all in one sitting, you feel a little differently. But the cliffhanger aspect, I love the little switch at the end of the second episode and the beginning of the third of Cad Bane escaping, but Yular in the conversation, different angle on it. It's really nicely done.
Yeah. Actual good cliffhanger that pays off really well. And I think that's a thing that we can watch for in the future. What you just said is this a great Clone Wars episode, or do we have ourselves a movie here?
Right.
Put together these three episodes. Yeah, that's the goal, right? To have yourself a movie sometimes, and then sometimes a snack. Let's look at the morals of the individual episodes. The first one is a lesson learned is a lesson earned. The second is overconfidence is the most dangerous form of carelessness. And the final moral is the first step to correcting a mistake is patience. Did any of those speak to you or your past career as a baseball coach, as often comes up when we talk about these morals?
Right. It's so weird. I watch Clone Wars for coaching ideas. The first one jumped out. It also might be I'm slightly out of practice reviewing the Clone Wars here, where, you know, I have to take the whole picture. But this is a good three-step, teaching plan here, right? But I love the first one. It's just it's a reminder. I love the, you know, lesson learned is a lesson earned. It can fit on a bumper sticker, but success is a collection of failures to me sometimes. It is just how you get past all those obstacles, and the journey forward is built by those lessons. And it just, I was like, all right, here we go. And I think for my money, this arc focuses on a lot of the Jedi stuff, and definitely Anakin always in the center, but it serves a reminder that Ahsoka is very much central to the Clone Wars story. In a way, it's her story overall, right? When you put all seven seasons down, and this is some big Ahsoka lessons it all starts in the first episode, the opening, where she makes a mistake, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's really powerful. That's the way this whole arc is framed, is the young Padawan making what is positioned to us as the audience a pretty clear mistake. And then the Jedi kind of saying, hey, you learned that lesson. You earned to learn that lesson, like this moral says. But then it does appear that that the Jedi make some similar mistakes as we go through, like overconfidence. I think for me, I like all these morals, and I think they tie really well to the individual ideas of the individual episodes. A lesson learned is a lesson earned is great, but it does for me have a little bit of that. Like, I feel like that could be on a poster with a picture of a bear lecturing me. There's something about it that's very like, did I have that poster in second grade? Yeah. It's valuable wisdom, but it is that kind of, you know, condensed wisdom. Yeah. Overconfidence one speaks very much to, I think, one of the big ideas in this arc and the Jedi in the prequel era altogether. I really gravitate toward the first step to correcting a mistake is patience. These morals over the seven seasons of Clone Wars go all sorts of different places. And sometimes they feel a little like, come on, this is basic information you need to learn as you're growing up. And some of them, to me, are a little bit bigger and deeper. And this is one of the ones that speaks to me because it goes to that, some of that Last Jedi idea of you it's okay to make mistakes. I mean, a lesson learned is a lesson earned has that, but this idea that you've stumbled and you can find a way to fix it. And in particular, the first step to correcting a mistake is patience. That's just a great way to look at patience. Cause I think often we can see patience as, you want something and you don't want to get too huffy while you wait. That's what patience is, right?
No huffy.
Don't get huffy. Or don't get into a fight. Take a deep breath, you know. But that idea that seeing patience is something that is proactive in a way that you can recenter yourself and, you know, accept that you made a mistake and then you want to correct it. Well, what's the first step is really stopping and thinking about, where did I make the mistake? Or maybe it's just, you know, like this is saying, the first step is just to stop and take a deep breath. And I feel like that moral pays off really well in the whole arc of these three episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good stuff there. Good look at it. And we could probably do most of these reviews just on the lessons, but luckily there's cool action. Yeah.
There is some cool action. So we're going to dive into the big ideas of the episode so we can get to the cool action and comedy moments and canon moments in the second half of the podcast. But first, as we always do, we talk about the big ideas, the big themes. What to you was really at stake over the course of this whole three episode arc, this movie, if you will?
Yeah, yeah. So here's where, I don't know, sometimes I go off the path and it's my own interpretation, but there's some stuff that I really, in the first episode, some quotes, especially when Ahsoka is, you know, messing up in the beginning here, there's this line of, they say to Ahsoka, you know, you're in trouble. It's not going to go well. You're going to fail, paraphrasing, but then they say to her, you just can't see it. And this lesson of, losing yourself in the moment. And along the way, I think Ahsoka is forced to slow down and learn those lessons. You know, the action's breaking out and she kind of, it's almost like wars not make one great. She's doing some great stuff on the battlefield. The heart is there. And so I took that, Joseph, and I look at, you know, this, her small mistake has bigger consequences. Obi-Wan actually says the setback on Felucia has affected our efforts on the whole sector. I'm like, I'll look at this. You talk about things at stake. This is kind of the Jedi that we know them in the prequels. They're so in it with overconfidence. They can't see the trouble all around them. And I kind of took that as a, if not a big comment on it, but just part of that tapestry of the fall of the Jedi. This is a smaller version.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I think that's so important that's the way the arc starts with some lessons of, you know, Jedi overconfidence. But the specific discussion of when Ahsoka apologizes, the lesson that she seems to think that she has earned and learned is that she was so focused on her part of the battle that she wasn't seeing the big picture. Mm-hmm. And then I think we see that echoed with the Jedi's attempt to catch up with Cad Bane and to catch up with the plot. And then as you're saying, that absolutely echoes out to that's kind of the Jedi's problem throughout the entire Clone Wars. And they know it up to a point, you know, Yoda and Mace Windu and the Jedi Council are aware that there is another Sith Lord somewhere and there is a malignant point to all this, but we can't see the big picture and we're just fighting each little battle and we're just justifying each little battle, each little skirmish. And, you know, the Jedi as a whole needed to try to learn the lesson that it feels like Ahsoka learned. And yeah, very interesting that then later in that first episode, Ahsoka seems to really make the choice to be like, I'm just going to concentrate on my part of it and not worry about the big picture and have kind of like faith that the other Jedi are handling the big picture. That, you know, she doesn't run up at first. She doesn't want to work in the archives, right? Mm-hmm. She thinks it's going to be boring. But then she just deals with her problem in the archives. She doesn't try to guess what's happening. She doesn't try to rush out because she thinks something else is more important is happening elsewhere. She kind of learns that the lesson to focus and take care of what's right in front of her, which is interesting because they have they're both wise, right? Just take care of what's in front of you and trust that other people are working on the big picture. But then there's also the more big picture idea of you can't really address your problem unless you understand it entirely.
Yeah, it's exactly like a baseball game, Joseph. You're right. You just said it. You can only worry about your bat in that moment, but you got to be part of the team. No,
okay. You got to be aware of it. Yeah.
No, it is.
Yeah, I think for me, a couple of the big ideas and the one that you're really tapping into that comes out of all three episodes ultimately is just the simple knowledge is power, which sounds simple, but it's. Sure. Important to Jedi, right? I mean, Yoda says, you know, the Jedi should only use the Force for knowledge and defense. And, you know, I think we often focus on the defense because we see that in combat and we can, you know, evaluate of was the Jedi acting in defense or were they attacking? But right. The knowledge part of it is that's all about the big picture, right? And it's really powerful that Ahsoka's initial failure on Felucia is that lack of knowledge. And then everything that flows from this is really about knowledge. The holocron is, you know, a repository of knowledge and a symbol of knowledge. And the archives are highlighted as being a place of knowledge. I'll want to talk about this a little bit more, but I think throughout it, Bane's ability to beat the Jedi is because he clearly knows them. He knows their weaknesses in combat. He knows their weaknesses in mindset. The reason he even has a chance at this is because Sidious gives him a bunch of information about the temple. I think this gets reflected again in the sort of morality and limits of the Jedi mind trick, that that is a way to get knowledge, but is it the right way? And then a lot of it comes together for me that Palpatine's actual plan is about knowledge. The whole reason for this is knowledge, that he wants to kidnap these children. And as he says, I foresee an army of Force talented spies in my service, trained in the dark side, to peer into every corner of the galaxy from afar. Yeah. His whole plan is just, if I know more about what's going on in the galaxy, then no one can possibly stop me. If I know the bigger picture better than any group of Jedi meditating, then I can always win. And then I think it's really significant that, and at the end of the arc, after Anakin and Ahsoka have messed up, kind of take turns making mistakes, they only manage to figure out where Cad Bane hid the children and like really resolve the plot when they're put out of action. The first step to correct a mistake is patience. They're not out there running around with lightsabers trying to make a big difference, and they're just calmly studying the ship and using just basic knowledge. And that is what wins the day, is knowledge.
Yeah. And when you kind of pull out, right, when they're forced to, but you're not in that forest. Now you see the trees, that old little saying too, and all the poster inspirations are coming into play in Clone Wars. But yeah, I actually really love that scene. It was fun as a fan, and you can have the connection there with Mustafar forthcoming there. Fun to see them, like you said, just it is a lesson in life where sometimes we are timed out. And you're in detention in the library, and you can take that breath of the moment. And I think it's very important, like you're pointing out, that that's kind of how it all begins to be solved. And when the Jedi can do that, and you kind of see it later on when they're all kind of, the four of them are meditating, Kenobi, Yoda, and Mace, and Anakin. Like when it's, I really love that scene of just like them slowing down. And what do you feel?
Yeah, working together and reaching out and sharing knowledge and trusting knowledge. I absolutely love that scene. And it's a great contrast to the Jedi mind trick, where they are pushing a little bit harder than they know they should, in that great shot of Ahsoka seeming a little troubled by it. Ahsoka is so the ultimate champion of compassion in this era. And it's great to see her have parts of this episode where she gets a little full of herself, or even like, I want to take Cad Bane down myself. And then to see her have that little chink in the armor of doubt, of, oh man, that seems like they're really hurting him. That doesn't seem like we should be doing that. So that's a great contrast to that peaceful four Jedi meditation that you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, and they play on nicely on the Attack of the Clones, Anakin kind of the rushing in, and he's even the one going, no, we'll take them together. He's almost quoting himself, or quoting Obi-Wan. And again, a reminder, she's got the skill, she's got the desire, as all Jedi do, but it was valuable to visit that concept, but through her eyes, and what you just pointed out is another, through Ahsoka's eyes, and how valuable and key she is, and centered she is in this Star Wars story.
Yeah, yeah. So what other ideas or notes did you jot down?
I got one. Wait, we just talked about it. Jedi being able to solve more problems by taking their time. It's sensing everything out there. Again, I just really like that. He talked about how Jedi go about doing things, and then also looking at the fall of the Jedi that we are in the middle of experiencing in the prequels. And it's, you and I have that, I will say you're the leader of the Justice for Jedi movement, and I am bringing snacks to the meeting that we have every week about it. It's important to, it came from within. There's a lot of that too, by the way. I love, you just made me think of something else I love about this arc is you mentioned the knowledge and Palpatine, and hey, when you got, a politician showing you blueprints of how to get around, that's going to help you. And Cad Bane gets in there. But it really is the Jedi are being destroyed from within type of thing for me. And listen that the, so they have to kind of quiet down and look in and see what they sense and feel. So anyways, I know going back to that scene where they're all meditating, I thought it was a real powerful scene. Fun. You get planets. Oh, Glee Anselm. Yeah. Val. But then, you know, just to see these four powerful all-star Jedi, working together in a different way than we see them in other parts of Star Wars during this era. That's what stood out for me and part of the lesson.
Yeah. And I think for me, for the kind of justice for the Jedi, part of that, where that's coming from is I think they do make so many mistakes, but I can kind of relate to the mistakes. Sidious is such a master puppeteer and he knows that they're doing this at some point, right? They're calmly meditating and looking for answers, trying to feel through the Force, not even just literally, you know, who's a Sith, like not just like they're unmasking him like Scooby-Doo, but like, right. Trying to understand the big picture. I'm sure they are trying to understand the big picture, but he keeps sending them in weird directions. Like, them not being able to know what this plan was. Like, obviously, it makes sense that somebody would want to destroy the future of the Jedi by taking these children. But why did they take them to this lab on Mustafar? What were those robots for? He's so good at jerking them around and confusing them. That I think sometimes I really have justice for the Jedi where I feel like they didn't make a mistake. They just got bested. And sometimes you get bested. Yeah. And you know, and I think this is a great example of them making mistakes, but also Sidious, you know, besting them.
Yeah. No. And besting them and having a discussion with a friend of mine over the summer over some real life issues, but just like, you know, Palpatine knew how to defeat them from within in the sense of not playing them on themselves, but just like he's the Phantom Menace for a reason. And it helps to be reminded of that. He's good at what he does until he isn't. But
yeah, exactly.
That's why I love his arc. It really is one of the, especially after season one of Clone Wars. This is what I feel is like some of the best Palpatine stuff in the Clone Wars of just like, oh, that's right. He is a dark Sith Lord too, doing dark Sith Lordy things. And that's part of what this battle is about, whether the Jedi are fully aware or not.
One of the best, just like absolute from like a literal fairy tale, creepy wizard moments for Palpatine Sidious when his hologram is leaning over the kid in the cradle going, stop crying. So creepy. It is like straight out of like Hansel and Gretel type, you know, fairy tale, you know.
Well, he has a line, he has a line that among the children of the Jedi that are now innocents, because he's saying it to Cad Bane, who Cad Bane for a second has a heart. You're like, what are you doing with children? I mean, I don't care, just pay me. But what are you doing? and that's very, you mentioned fairy tale. It is the, you know, Wicked Witch of Mustafar.
Yeah, no.
Of the Jedi that are now innocents. Whoa.
Yeah, I had written that down at the end of the notes in case it didn't come up anywhere else, because I wanted to talk about that, which it's just a great insight into, we always see Sidious as the master, you know, puppeteer and the planner, and we know that he has anger and that he wants to unleash it. We get to see flashes of that, but knowing that he truly believes that he believes if you're born with an affinity to the light side, that's disgusting. And you've already, you know, in his view, sort of violated the natural order of things. If you're an infant who has a natural inclination to the light, you know, because he's not playing politics in that moment. You know, he's not saying what Cad Bane needs to hear. He's just saying like, oh, by the way, this is one of my horrible beliefs.
Yeah.
Really, yeah, creepy. Yeah. And I love Bane going, sure, whatever.
Just Bane. Yeah. The redemption of Cad Bane. We need that poem. You're right. Palpatine is this multifaceted threat. He's got skills up and down, man. But at the center of it is this and this. And it was just a good, like I said, good reminder to be like, oh, that's right. He's definitely evil.
Oh yeah, definitely super evil. One of the other like big ideas that I wanted to be sure to address, because I think, you know, it's right there in one of the morals, and I think it is how the Jedi actually do screw up and make mistakes in this whole arc, is that idea of overconfidence. You know, it's a big one in Star Wars storytelling and morality. The moral overconfidence is the most dangerous form of carelessness, but we just see it. I mean, Ahsoka thinking she's winning the battle on Felucia. That Cad Bane has this, you know, big picture of misdirection that the Jedi can't see. And we get to see in that first episode, Obi-Wan and Anakin very quickly make the assumption that he's after the, you know, troop movement information in the East Tower Communication Center. And it really is them being overconfident that they are correct about what he's after and mm-hmm. being blinded by the war. And like, of course, that's the big thing going on. So, of course, that's what he's after. Instead of they don't take any time to stop and, you know, try to sense him. Like Yoda senses his presence right. and right. has those little flashes. But, you know, he's really able to wrap them around his little Duros bounty hunter finger because they're overconfident in their knowledge of what he is up to. Right. Another great moment of overconfidence where, well, actually, a moment. I think the whole second episode is really about Anakin's overconfidence and gets pointed out by Yularen in fun and funny ways. But that the moment that really jumped out to me is when Ahsoka suggests, you know, the great Jedi thing of let it go. If we just get off the ship, the holocron might actually be destroyed. And Anakin responds that he wants to return it to the library personally, which is such ego, such overconfidence of like, I don't want to just resolve the problem. I want to walk in with a smug smile and go, here you go, Jocasta Nu, which is just total overconfidence. You mentioned the great Anakin saying, you know, we'll take him together while Ahsoka is being overconfident and gets zapped and taken prisoner by Bane because she's like, ah, you're not that impressive. Ahsoka, you know, has to yell patience at Anakin to stop him going after Cad Bane. Because again, it's that overconfidence that Anakin, I think these are the moments where he's like, I am really powerful. Whatever the Chosen One thing is about, I'm super powerful and overconfident. And he admits to it. You know, Ahsoka apologizes at the end of that episode. He's like, no, start to finish, my bad. Paraphrasing, Anakin doesn't say my bad. But even Mace and Obi-Wan falling into Bane's trap of, you know, it's a little bit like we need to follow him. We need to find the holocron. We need to, you know, we know it's a trap, but we need to play it out. But they still fall into Bane's trap. So a lot of moments of overconfidence.
Overconfidence, which is, as you've heard before in Star Wars, their weakness.
It is. Any other big ideas for you that you wanted to discuss?
No. There's a lot of, in these three episode arcs, the action and everything kind of informs a lot of my opinions and where I get a lot of the joy from the episode. So feel free to move on, though. But fun. And again, it was fun going back to the Clone Wars report and being like, oh, all right, deep breath. Three themes to combine to one.
Yeah. The only other big picture idea that I really wanted to touch on quickly and get your thoughts on is just the sort of why of Cad Bane is a badass, you know, not just because he looks cool and he's got a deep voice, but I like that this episode really demonstrates that he knows the Jedi's limits and he's great at distraction. So his first move in a couple different combat situations. Well, first he just tries to stay out of combat with them, but the second that he gets in combat with them, he disarms their lightsabers, you know, and he knows that that's their go-to. So the second they lose their lightsabers, they're just a little bit off their game because they're used to having that be their first move. He knows their tactics in their mindset. He is constantly putting others in jeopardy, trying to have other things go on to distract them. You know, he knows about the connection between the Padawan and the Master, you know, and he has that level of knowledge. I love it when he says, isn't negotiation the Jedi way? He kind of mocks them of like, what are you going to do? Torture me? He truly knows the Jedi philosophy as well as their limitations. You know, he's got that the special Jedi binders that he puts on Ahsoka and calls them special Jedi binders. He's like, I know how you think. I know how you act. And I just loved it that it's not just like he's good with a blaster so he can take it to a Jedi. His whole thing is knowledge is power, along with lots of weapons, but knowledge first.
Yeah, playing their moral center against himself. That's a good template to, well, I, you know, not defeat the Jedi, but to get a leg up at times.
Yeah. Do you still enjoy him and see him as this great badass when his first move is, for the most part, try to avoid having a fight with the Jedi? Or does that just make him cool and calculated and smart to you?
Yeah, no, smart. That is absolutely... knowing when to fight and knowing when you can, but you know when we can get the win or when you can get the loss. It's okay to walk away to fight another day. No, that makes me respect more. He is a complete picture. Not comparing him against any other bounty hunter or that kind of character in Star Wars, but that's going back to his debut in broadcast form. And this is something when I was writing about it for the book, like you almost get confused. You're like, okay, wait a minute. That's right. I did see him first going to the Senate chambers and that whole thing. Right. Okay, cool. Put it down. Like, that's really impressive because he's killing people, which is something in Clone Wars at the time. Like, you're like, oh, I thought this was like the Jar Jar Binks, you know, yoinks show. And enjoy it. And like, oh, he comes along and you kind of like, what, really, the cowboy hat? But it's how he knew how to get in there and how he knew how to at every step away. It's just a complete picture as a villain for me in the underworld, where other times there's a lot of just brute force. I can't imagine Dengar's got these abilities, you know? And so, yeah, that's one of the reasons you like it. Then the design, the voice, everything that you might, at least I questioned in the beginning, really goes away. It's not a cowboy joke or an Old West joke. He becomes his own thing because a lot of what you're describing. I love when he taught, you know, the negotiation thing. I love, we can talk about the death in this arc here. The Master Opal's death is really affecting and really brutal. And not that I'm rooting for him to brutally kill Jedi or characters, but it's just makes you kind of pay attention. It's something different, and that's why I like him.
Yeah. And I think even his killing of poor Master Bola Ropal is a moment of overconfidence from Bane, where mm-hmm. the droids are like, you can't turn it to 11 or whatever the torture level was. And he's like, I don't care, you know, and he gets a dead Jedi Master and a really disturbing moment in the Clone Wars. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, I might address it later. There was another one of the featurettes too, where Filoni was talking about that moment and just needing it for the story, but also just the how they shot it and how they changed things around, including the droid stuff. We'll talk about them, I'm sure. But yeah, it's affecting. It's pretty brutal, and you don't see that a lot in Star Wars, you know, at that time. You know, yes, we got Sith, we got, you know, Empire Strikes Back, hands cut off, but I don't know, it's kind of in your face that this Jedi is dying.
Yep, there is no ambiguity about that. He is dead. Even the battle droids are sad. You mentioned how this is just kind of in some ways a little summary of the failure of the Jedi. Any other big picture connections to larger Star Wars themes or storytelling?
Nothing I made note of here, but I also some of the, it's great to mention it later on, but just seeing the relationship between Yularen, Anakin, Jedi, and Republic, and are they in lock sync as it seems at times? It's just part of the bigger picture of what ends up happening for me too.
Yeah, that was there's definitely lots of little canon connections that we'll talk about, but the one that was like really felt big picture to me in the ongoing pursuit of, if not justice for the Jedi, understanding why they fell. I love it when this gets highlighted. There was this conversation where Obi-Wan said, tell him, meaning Palpatine, this is not Republic business. It's an internal Jedi affair. And Anakin comes back with, I'm sorry to disagree, but as long as the Jedi are acting as a military, we should report to the Chancellor, even on internal matters such as this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a big part of the successful manipulation of the Jedi by Palpatine, is getting the Jedi Order to tie themselves more closely to the Republic. You know, even in Light of the Jedi, spoilers for 5 seconds for those who haven't read it, there's that quick passage about how, yeah, the Jedi help, but they help the Republic, but they do their own thing, and how much Palpatine was able to strip that of them. I love when the Clone Wars reminds us that that's a big part of the failure.
Yep. All wrapped up in some witty banter and battling between Yularen and Anakin.
Exactly. All right. With that, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be back to discuss action and comedy and fun canon moments and all sorts of great stuff like that. We will be back in just a moment.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back. So we're going to discuss the action moments first, Ken. I think there's some good action moments in this, you know, with Cad Bane and all. What were some of your favorite moments of thrilling Star Wars action in this arc?
Really? Tiny one first. There's some bigger sequences. A tiny action moment. In the opening of the first episode of New York, they do a cutback down to Felucia. On top of the crawler, on top of the transport there, Ahsoka is doing backflips like a gymnast. And it's this little shot. She's just like, boop, boop, and she does a backflip and like deflects a shot. And it's not even close. It's up. Your camera maybe, I think, is even panning in or pushing in. And I was just like, damn, Ahsoka's got skills. Like I can't do it. You know, I used to take tumbling. I was four. I couldn't do a forward somersault without hurting myself. Here she is back flipping and fighting off blasters. I just love that little moment.
Yeah. I mean, that opening with Ahsoka is really like, yeah, you know, this, her skills are not the problem at all. It is, you know, her power is not the problem. Her, you know, athletics are not the problem. It's seeing the big picture. So that's a great one. What are some others?
For the second episode, I just love the whole sequence with the walkers in space. Just from the, hey, we can take those ATTEs, right? And I think at one point, a clone says, calls them an AT-AT, I think.
Yeah. Controversial.
I love that. And then dropping them, it's just, which is weird because it actually has, I'll mention later on one of the things I actually, years later, still hate in Star Wars. But the whole sequence, it's very what I want out of the Clone Wars and what even the movie, which was one of the first things we see that we talked about, the temple scene and the walkers going up and everything, like that is part of the pew, pew, pew fun we want. And I love that sequence too. And I just love that it starts with like Yularen going, no, they're going to do it.
Yeah. And I love that bit of, it's funny, but it in the planning of it, it really emphasizes Anakin's like, I'm going to find a way to do this. There's that great moment with Rex where he's like, we don't have any way to do this. And Anakin just glares at him and Rex is like, okay, right. We'll find a way. Okay. I know. So I loved that. For me, in the first episode, I really liked the lightsaber fight with a fake Jocasta Nu, even though it was fake Jocasta Nu. It's still cool to see the lightsaber, the Claudite changeling Cato Parasiti. In particular, you talked about the backflips. I love the roll that Ahsoka does on fake Jocasta Nu's back, and then she's confused about where Ahsoka is for just a second. This great blend of action and comedy, and Ahsoka really using her athletic ability and her smaller stature to confuse her opponents is just fun. The shot of the ATTEs just dropping down is really awesome, really cool. But I love the no gravity hangar fight. That was just some great Star Wars cool pew pew pew. I really liked the heavy clone walking upside down, firing way more than they should. It was great. And that one shot of Anakin finally making contact with Cad Bane and kicking him, and he flips, and it's pulled back and it's, you know, slowed down because of the no gravity. Yeah. It's really got that vibe. It's framed like a little Renaissance painting of, you know, the kick when Anakin kicks Cad Bane and zero gravity and they both flip and float. I really like that.
Yeah. I noted that sequence too. It's great because you sense it coming, right? Because he says, you know, Cad Bane kind of, you know, tells him to turn off the gravity. And so you're like, oh, here we go. It's like a, you know, Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie. But it becomes something else too when I think one of the first clones that gets cut and just the way the body, the pieces just float away. It is like an art piece. Like you just said, just the whole sequence. It was really nicely done. And it stands out to me.
Yeah, it's weird when you can celebrate beautiful violence, but that's kind of what it is. The battle droid parts just kind of floating away. Yeah, it's really disturbing and beautiful and fun all at the same time. Another one for me, just a small one from the third episode, is Obi-Wan throwing that grappling hook to try to catch Bane instead of doing a force jump. It doesn't do Obi-Wan any good because he doesn't get there in time. But I think for me, it's the reason I wrote it down is there had been that discussion when the prequels first came out and they kind of had their utility belts like Batman and Robin. And that was, you know, one of the very long list of people from our generations of assumptions that we had about the Jedi, that it's just a lightsaber and they're mystical robes and they don't have, you know, a Jedi arang like Batman has a Batarang and grumble, grumble, grumble. And I tilted a little bit toward that. But I also just thought, I just thought all the accessories were cool and I just like Jedi stuff. So for me, it was just seeing that was like, yeah, Obi-Wan with a grappling hook. It was a nice moment for me to reflect on. Any bias I had against them having utility belts full of practical tools is gone. Yeah. I was happy to see Obi-Wan throw a grappling hook.
I also just like, That's great stuff, by the way. I also just love, you know, Mason Kenobi teaming up. It's an underrated team out there in the field. I like seeing that when it happens. And yes, it does happen a lot in Clone Wars, but it's especially during this time when you're seeing it for the first time. Like, you know, you didn't see Kenobi and Mace fighting back to back a ton in the movies, you know?
No. Just fighting for their lives for a second in Geonosis there. Yeah. Anything else on your action list? I got one more, but I want to make sure that we hear you all yours.
Yeah, no, same. It might. I wonder if it's the same. I'd love, and it's over the second and third episode, but mostly in the beginning of the third. It's Cad Bane's escape, disguising himself as a clone, and everything that vicious gut, knee to the gut to Ahsoka. It is one of those. It's just kind of cool, and like, oh, Cad Bane, he's a smart cat. He really goes all out to, you know, actually have his body. You know, I think probably putting the clone in his clothes and, you know, tricking him into thinking he killed Cad Bane. So it's kind of just a cool sequence for me. Almost like you mentioned Noor stuff, but it's almost kind of like a Usual Suspects or some kind of what a twist at the end. And I just really liked it. I thought it was nicely done.
Yeah, no, yeah, I totally agree. And like, yeah, them seeing from a distance that shot and seeing what appears to be Cad Bane falling. Yeah, just the brutality of it and the cleverness of it is all great. And also I had forgot this one, you know, the fact that he's bleeding his different colored blood, which is probably from Ahsoka really taking it to him, which I did like. I like that he beat her, but he only beat her because he's fought Jedi a bunch and he knows they're a little bit overconfident and he's got the zapper up his sleeve. But when she does manage to get a hold of him, she just pounds him brutally, right? There's the crunch and he's in real pain. So again, it was great action, like you're saying, to tell the story. And the story of Cad Bane is, you know, deflect and distract the Jedi as much as possible. And because if they get real close to you, they're going to hurt you real bad.
Right. Yeah.
And he still makes his way through. The last one for me was the rescue of the younglings on Mustafar. Just in terms of Star Wars weirdness, creepiness, you know, I like that those, you know, appear to be kind of medical droids. But then when Anakin and Ahsoka get there, they're holding the younglings, which makes you nervous. And then just they're punching robots, holding children. Those little arms swinging is really frightening. And that final beat of Anakin rescuing the Rodian youngling, looking into his big, you know, strange Rodian eyes. And it's a cool action move that he does. The, you know, force pushes or force pulls the Rodian to him and jumps off the droid. But it's kind of powerful, sad inversion of Revenge of the Sith, right? Of here he is on Mustafar, desperately rescuing a youngling. And, you know, in the many, many memories that are going through his mind when he's crying on Mustafar in Revenge of the Sith, is that one of them, of remembering when he was here on this planet desperately saving younglings instead of what he just did?
What have I become? Yeah, it could work out. I like the Mustafar setting. We can talk about it in a second, but yeah, it'll work for me there. And that's a great sequence. Yeah, a big final. We talk about this being a little film. There's a big, giant third act set piece, and it worked very well.
Yeah, absolutely terrifying. All right, so let's move on to moments of comedy or whimsy or weirdness. What do you have for that?
I've broken down by episode. The little quotes. Obi-Wan saying, you know, Anakin asks, you know, what's going on with Ahsoka? She's following your teachings. Anakin, is she winning? come on, you can't deny the power of Kit Fisto's smile. I mean,
and it's real quick, isn't it?
It's real quick. When the other bounty hunter, the Claudites, infiltrating the library and changes into Jocasta Du, and Bane, you know, what's going on with your voice? And then the quote is, change of plans. I'm the librarian now. I'm like, that's kind of like how you become a librarian. Our friend Chris is a librarian. I think his family, he was doing comedy and graphic design. He was like, change of plans. I'm the librarian now. And I think that's how you become a librarian.
Sometimes it just happens to you, right? You know, a wild weekend and you wake up on Monday, you're a librarian now. No, that line is great. What else you got?
Going into the second episode, the whole Yularen and Anakin, I call it the sitcom. I love the Yularen line. So it's your usual version of success. And again, I it's fun. It's totally headcanon. And I just, you know, as I stares at my Yularen action figure that first rate Nate gifted up here, as Yularen grows in the Empire and is on the Death Star and he's looking at it, it's like, does he ever, because I don't think he knows, but does he ever look at Vader and go, gosh, he walks like, talks like, upsets me like, is that?
So, yeah, I mean, if he's on the bridge and Vader is doing the exact same hands behind the back, like, how could Yularen not be like, come on, of course. Yeah. Of course.
Looking over at Tarkin, and Tarkin's just like, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. As Tarkin kind of goes through the same things, by the way, along in the Tarkin book by Lucino, there is those kind of things of Tarkin like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's such a great connection between Anakin and Vader of, you know, in some moments fulfilling a similar role.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about the whole the torturing of Master Rapal, which is very effective. Like I said, very effective. But you can't deny some of the great weird comedy. Just and I'll mention that featurette again in Filoni, but he talks about too. Like, we have the droids, we change their voice, their tone, and it's just, are the droids sad? Are the droids looking into themselves, saying, "What are we doing here?" Just with the one, we've lost all his vital signs. He's dead.
Like, what's going on? The line I wrote down is, he is no longer functioning.
Yeah. I want it from a certain point of view story about that particular droid.
Well, what's your, I think this falls under the category of whimsy and weirdness. What is your headcanon for where that sadness is coming from? Is it their own increasing awareness that they are built to die? That they are built to be shattered by Jedi? Why are they sad for this Jedi?
Yeah, it's not so much that it's maybe, it's are they seeing themselves? Because a little bit later you have the one droid going, it's on my list as well, but I hate this job, and then they're like, I got a case of the Mondays. But then the one who's just like, I'm not the commander. And so then the clone and the other one goes like, I'm the commander. So they shoot the commander, and then that droid goes, I guess I'm the commander now, and then is shot. Which is this little joke, but it's also the death trap of the pursuit of power. Like, it's a lesson of, I don't have the power. Boom. Well, I guess I have the power. Boom. So the droids, maybe there's some kind of awakening, you know, maybe there's some kind of awakening. And so to see this can't be good. We're built to die. I don't want them to die. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Just that idea of like really having to face it, the idea of suddenly no longer functioning. There's that great moment too, where I believe Anakin is rushing the bridge, and like, there are only three of us. Like, it doesn't matter. There's some really depressing battle droids in this. And it's interesting as the second season kicks off, and we are moving towards a decrease in that kind of wacky droid humor. And this feels like transitioning into, there is some wacky droid humor, but a little bit on the darker side.
Yeah.
What did Filoni say in the video of why they made that choice then of changing the droid's voices, just to give it more weight or to treat it as something solemn?
Yes. Yeah. So there's a little bit of unintentional comedy in the way they approach it. Maybe that's there as well. But no, that was part of the choice of Eve. You know, it's so bad. Like, even the droids are changed a little bit, and we presented them a different way. That was a conscious, very conscious decision.
Yeah, that's great to make sure that, you know, for the kids who are watching back in the day or in the future on Disney Plus, that this is, you know, a life lost, and that is a thing to take seriously. Powerful. Yeah. A lot of great comedy and lines for this, and I think the comedy style of the Clone Wars is really developing, and there are still some kind of bigger, louder comedy lines, and I think some more subtle ones. I really liked in the first episode, where Ahsoka is clearly chafing against having to be on what she is at the time perceiving as boring guard duty in the archives. And she says, guard duty for how long? And Mace Windu responds, longer now.
Yeah.
It's just such a, Mace is always entertaining because he's so severe, but that is such a great, like, dad line, you know, more authoritative parent across the board of like, well, since you sassed me, twice as long.
Yeah, I think a lot of parents watching are probably like,
another line I liked early in the episode, just because I always do darkly like it when the battle droids scream, when one of the ships is falling apart, the separatist ships, and they're a droid is trying to say Roger, Roger, and it turns into a scream as the droid falls. Roger, Roger!
You do a supercut of all the droids fall into their doom in the Clone Wars.
Why? Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. And then my final one was also from the great Yularen exchanges. I think this was from the beginning of the third episode where Anakin is yelling, like, lock down all the hyperspace rings. And Yularen responds, what could possibly have happened since I last spoke with you?
That was really good. Yes. Yes.
It captures that relationship where he's just like this sort of proper. I've brushed my mustache 7 times today because everything can be in order. But somehow whenever Anakin is around, there's just chaos constantly.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah. Super great.
One
Any
final
other line. Moments?
Yeah. One final line. I had it down because I enjoyed it, but it was also a question for you. When Kenobi and Mace are teaming up there, the Kenobi stuff goes wrong. And Kenobi says, you certainly stepped in it this time. I'm like, has he
Again,
ever
this
said
is a spoiler.
That?
What's yeah. that?
Has he ever
no,
said
go ahead.
That? No. Has he?
I don't think that is a repeat line from Kenobi. I don't think that's in his catchphrase list with, you know, hello there and Anakin.
Look, I so enjoyed it, but it's along with the big ass door debate or, you know, modern phrase. It so stood out to me of just like, is he a 1940s detective? I mean, we got that in Attack of Clones, so maybe it works. But just like, you certainly stepped in it this time, you see? I loved it. I loved it.
Well, this is a spoiler. It's the only thing I have listed in my things I questioned or disliked about this episode. it's this slow transition in the style of humor for the Clone Wars and for Star Wars. And we talk about it a lot. There's always going to be wacky humor in Star Wars. That's a part of it. It emanates from Lucas. That's, I think, part of his personal sense of humor, of liking the more wacky humor. But I think the fact that it's a literal pun of that Mace Windu had just stepped into, you know, a beam and tripped the security beam. I think I would have been fine with it if, you know, Mace hadn't actually stepped on something, so it wasn't a pun, but the literal, like, you stepped in it. Get it, Mace? Get it?
Yeah, puns are my least favorite form of humor in the world, so I'm right there with you on that question.
Yeah.
Whole picture of it, but just the line itself, yes. Okay, that's great. We'll do an essay think piece on that one.
Yeah. I understand that Obi-Wan in many of the Jedi, but Obi-Wan in particular, likes to use a little bit of humor and snark to handle the tension of a situation. But that one was like a little bit on the nose, Obi-Wan. Get your writers to punch that one up for the next time somebody steps into a security beam is my advice. I'm sorry for so viciously attacking this episode of Star Wars by being unhappy with one line from my
angry in your car right now.
Exactly. All right. Let's move on then to bits of canon and connection to other stories. What jumped out at you? What did you write down?
Yeah. So for me, this is one of the first times, and I was kind of researching a little bit, and I think they do in some of the behind the scenes stuff kind of touch on it too. So, but I'm not 100%. Sure on this, but for me, this was one of the first times I felt I was really just kind of meant to pay attention and was aware of a Jedi holocron, you know, like, and anyone could show me 15 examples of where it popped up before in canon or legends or whatever. For me, this was like, what is this now? A little box of magic? What do they got? And now it's so commonplace. It's something we're so aware of. It's a key to a lot of little Star Wars stories, and I enjoy it. And I like it. It's not a resistance thing. It's just like going back, looking, watching this now. Like, this is, for me, was like, the starting point of Jedi holocrons and Sith holocrons being part of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I didn't honestly take the time to look up the exact history of the holocron, but it definitely feels like, to me, like, okay, it's fine. Holocron has done had some small character cameo roles other place, but this is its big debut. Like, this is holocron that cements what it is, how important it is, how weird it is, how cool it is, and that you're totally right. It ends up affecting a ton of different Star Wars storytelling. What else you got on your list?
So going back to the library battle, but a Claudite just showing up is one of the first times for a lot of us, again, during this era when it aired, And season one does this a lot too, but Claudite combined with Jocasta Nu, this is like when those formerly unfamiliar prequels that we all were taking shots at, a lot of because it wasn't what we knew, just not just in plot or presentation, but just like new characters. And sometimes you always describe that great but horrible feeling of every time you turn on a new Star Wars movie, book, or open a book or a TV show, you're like, I don't know the names of everything. And it puts us in a weird spot. But a Claudite, Jocasta Nu, it's suddenly made the prequels those little inside jokes or little inside information, or, oh, yeah, Zam Wessel is a changeling or Claudite. The librarian's name is Jocasta Nu. Suddenly, it was all familiar, and it puts the prequels, gives it almost like a little historical context. Like, it, no, believe us, the prequels are part of your Star Wars fandom, whether you know it or not. You know that it's Jocasta Nu. You know she appeared here, and now it kind of all feels comforting.
Yeah. It makes it all feel very lived in, and it is very, you know, justice for Attack of the Clones, because I always liked Jocasta Nu. I always liked that idea of the library and seeing more of the temple, and I love spending any amount of time in there and getting that, you know, that information that plays big into the Dooku Jedi Lost audiobook and script, of that there are forbidden books in the Jedi archives, and even dangling that's some great tip of the iceberg storytelling about the archives of, yeah, Jedi value knowledge, and we lock some of it away because it's that dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great stuff. Yeah, okay. A couple of from me, I've been waiting for this. I believe this is our first chronological sighting of Obi-Wan being on the council. And I'm fascinated with that because I've been thinking with the Kenobi show coming up, if there are going to be any flashbacks, you know, that's kind of a big moment in Obi-Wan's life of when he gets promoted to the council. And, you know, was there any sort of a story to that, or, you know, he is quite young, you know, to be on the council. And that is, I think as fans, we could just be like, yeah, no, Obi-Wan, he's a great Jedi. We know. Yeah. So he's on the council now. Great. But like for the story of Obi-Wan, you know, this is kind of a big moment, a big time after the events of Attack of the Clones, that Anakin is quickly, you know, makes it to Jedi Knight somehow. We don't know that story either. And this is the first time since Obi-Wan became a knight that he doesn't have Anakin as a Padawan, and he's immediately thrust into this war, and then he's immediately asked this great honor to join the council. And I'm just really intrigued by all that.
Mm. I want that story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll get it. Maybe we will get it. Maybe not. One never knows. You know, you and I spent a lot of time in the first season really tracking how much they talk about the nature of the war, that it is not in the first season ambiguous. The first season is mostly about, well, whoever controls the outer rim is going to be able to push inward to the galaxy successfully. And I'm interested to track that as it goes. And I thought that was interesting that the loss of Felucia, you know, affects everything in the outer rim, and the Republic is losing ground, and that we get that story in one line.
Yeah. Yeah. Right there. Yeah. Okay. I get.
Yeah. And then, you know, that this whole arc is a celebration of Attack of the Clones. Jedi holding device, the same one that we saw Obi-Wan in. I liked learning more about that, where when Bane says attached mind limiters, pain pulsers, and give him a full dose of XC-33. Don't know exactly what that is, but the mind limiters, pain pulsers make sense, and the mind limiters, that's always what I thought of that that device, that, you know, it looks different, it looks cool, but I've always been like, well, how does that hold a Jedi? Why can't they just, you know, use the Force to, you know, hit, to disable the device in some way? And that's always kind of in my headcanon, that there's something in that energy that is making it difficult for them to concentrate, or obviously the pain pulsers are part of how they're torturing him. But I just love hearing the mind limiters, because that makes me think like, okay, is that part of what this device is?
Well, and it ties in, you know, season seven, you know, with some stuff that they have Maul in, you know, the Mandalorians have ways to fight the Jedi, the Jedi binders, like you said, everything. And it just shows that over thousands of years, people have been trying to fight these knights and finding different ways to limit them. And I like that. Including some stuff, well, there's been some of the Light of the Jedi stuff of how you kind of confuse or mess the feelings around them, make them darker. It's just a lot of cool stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a couple more, but do you have any others that you wanted to share?
Yeah, little tiny lines and everything. Also, the Kyber crystals, not so routine back then. This, again, also might have been one of the first times you really kind of hear that term, which for us, you know, the Kyber crystal spelt differently, I think with K-A-I-I, the one from Splinter of the Mind's Eye and everything. You kind of grew up with that in the back of your head. It was part of Star Wars lore, but by now it starts to really become something. And the Clone Wars absolutely just takes the concept of the Kyber crystals and the lightsabers and the gathering, that great arc and all that stuff. So this is one of the first times, again, similar with Jedi Holocron, of like, wait a minute, I heard about that.
There was a time where it was around the edges in Splinter of the Mind's Eye. I think maybe one of the first places I saw it was in, you know, the original just Star Wars visual dictionary.
Yeah. Right.
Cross-section of a lightsaber. But this so brings this part of Star Wars that is all about, you know, crystals.
Yeah,
spiritual crystals really brings it to the very forefront.
Yeah, little lines. Ahsoka, it's a trap. We'll take them together. We already mentioned, but Anakin says a little bit later on in episode 3 of this arc, we tore this ship apart. We know he walks like Vader with his hands behind his back, all those kind of things. But to have these turns of phrases that are just part of what he says, you know, impressive, most impressive, has already popped up in the Clone Wars. But we tore the ship apart. We always joke, but it's like if Force Center was going to become a dark side podcast, you and I would still probably say our little catchphrases that we always say, you know, like it's just who we are. So I like that little moment with Anakin. We tore the ship apart.
Like, yeah, we would probably still say, yeah, to affirm one another, even if we were evil.
Well said. So returning to the planet. Yeah, well said. Return to the planet is Naboo, Mustafar. Last time I mentioned watching one of those featurettes. I don't watch them for every episode, but interesting one. I recommend you all seek out and watch. About 2.5 minutes of Filoni talking about the return to Mustafar. So this is a big canon connection, big lore connection. We got Revenge of the Sith in the back of our brain. And Filoni admits, and he's a little younger, that cowboy had a little fresher. But he admits fighting with George about this and says, no, I didn't think anyone should be there. We shouldn't see it. Anakin should not step on that planet till the end, till it matters. And he tells him this is an older featurette from several years ago. I think it comes from like the DVD sets. And Filoni says, George told me not to worry about all that. And I'm paraphrasing, but just worry about the story. This is a great ending to this arc. We need this here. This is amazing. This is a great opportunity to use it. Don't worry about all those little details on who set first there, or Dana can know about it. It's a mining colony. You can imagine there's some exporting and importing going there. It's a business. People know this planet. Just don't worry about it. And I thought that was fascinating. It's just,
yeah.
And Dave kind of say, yeah, I was a fan and I questioned it as a fan. And he came back to me as a storyteller.
That's really, really interesting to have those two different perspectives on the power of a thing like Mustafar, and for Filoni to come at it as a fan and be honest about it and have that be like, from a fan's perspective, that's sacred ground that has to, you can't mess with it. And from Lucas's perspective, if he thinks that's the place to end this story big, I would imagine that, or theorize that Lucas might feel that way because fans know it. And because if we hear the word Mustafar and Anakin just casually being like, oh yeah, maybe he refueled there. And we as fans know, no, if it's Mustafar, it's a big deal. Something horrible is happening. So it's really interesting to think that Lucas was coming at it from this perspective of the fact that fans know it is, in fact, good because it will heighten the stakes for fans rather than have it be something that just can't be touched because we already know it.
Yeah. 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 So fascinating stuff. Again, love not just going back to rewatch these episodes and find the themes, but just see what went into making them. It's pretty fascinating to look back. Final one for me. I don't want to hold court here too long. You mentioned already, we talked about it, but when Palpatine says, I foresee an army of Force talented spies in my service. So now very easy to connect that to the Inquisitors. Very easy to look back, whether that was intended or not back then. I don't know, but it's something they pulled from them. It's interesting for me because as much as I love Rebels now, season one in 2014 was a little bit of a different time for Star Wars fans. We were getting familiar with the unfamiliar. The Grand Inquisitor, which is a character I end up loving, and I love Jason Isaacs' read on it, everything about it, and the Inquisitors itself. I love a lot of what's there for the Inquisitors, other than maybe the helicopter blades, all right? There was an initial thing inside me where I was like, I don't think. what is this? This doesn't really fit. This is creating a new villain because you can't have Vader running around all the time. And I don't know if I like this. This is me back in 2014. Forgetting that this is literally said by Palpatine. And again,
yeah,
is it super, super intentional, or is it just something in Rebels? They went, you know what? Palpatine says this. What if we explore that more? Probably more of that case. But to hear it now, and as we have everything laid down on that canon roadmap, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, it tracks.
Yeah, and I'm paraphrasing because I didn't write the line down, but he says that line of, like, they don't deserve this power, or, you know, we can't let their power go to waste.
Yeah.
So that idea of, well, okay, well, maybe for some reason Sidious feels more secure in his hold on the galaxy, so, you know, once the Clone Wars end and the Empire rises, he's not pursuing the spy network as much, but he still thinks it's a waste to have, you know, the any light side user use their power in any way for good. All of their power should be mine. I should twist them to using their power for me.
Yeah,
that does really track.
Yeah,
good stuff. For me, just a few more. I like the knowledge that if things had gone better, there might have been a Gungan Jedi out in the future.
Oh,
that was nice to see. That we can just see that Gungan infant is a Gungan infant, but like, no, that's a future Jedi. I thought I saw this, and then it was confirmed on Kristen Baver's great written review of all the Clone Wars episodes, that the Gungan child's mobile has a sea monsters from Phantom Menace. That's great. The Sando Aqua Beast and the Golo Clawfish. That's very nice. I'm sure Dryden Voss would get hungry looking at that child's mobile above the floating above the Gungan. In terms of just a repeated line that worked for me from, you know, original and prequel movies is, you know, it is the future you see, young Skywalker, hearing Yoda say that.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that the good and the bad of seeing the future is a thing that both Anakin and Luke really wrestle with. And I've been thinking a lot about how these, you know, big twin themes of Star Wars of hope and fear are different ways to react to the future. And I like, this is just a quick line, but I just like knowing from Yoda's perspective that even then, like, the future is, you have to be really delicate about the way you see the future, because you can respond to it with hope or fear. You know, you can try to do your best with it. You can try to control it, all that. And knowing that that's kind of a loaded line for Yoda was cool to hear. Just at the very beginning of the arc, just that reminder that Cad Bane knows Sidious is a Sith Lord. Like, he's not just like, rando in a cloak hired me, you know? And we sometimes wonder about that, of who actually has knowledge that what the Sith even were, or that they survived, or that there's a powerful one running around the galaxy. It's cool to know Cad Bane knows he is a Sith Lord. He says it.
Yeah. Talk about knowledge and what Cad Bane knows. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's got a good big picture of what's going on in the galaxy. He's probably just shaking his head going, idiot Jedi.
Yeah.
I liked his great, just straightforward, crappy, greedy Newt Gunray appearance. That's always nice. But the last big one for me is that group Jedi mind trick. That's a big one, right? Of knowing that's already going to be a power that Jedi wrestle with, of like, well, great, you can use it to stop violence. If the only choice is a mind trick or a fight, why not just get somebody to stand down? Yeah, but then it is actually reaching into somebody's mind and making a choice for them. So it's always going to be a little bit of a morality question of the mind trick. But then just hearing the actual sort of technical knowledge of it, that as Mace says, I believe it's Mace, compelling a strong mind can destroy it. I really appreciated hearing that line better, because sometimes when I've watched this episode, there's a part of me that's like, well, why don't we see them, or in particular, like Vader or Palpatine, do this more often, of just, you know, take knowledge. And, you know, we do see it with Kylo, and it doesn't work out for him. But knowing that is a known, discussed idea that trained Jedi know of, you can't push too hard against a strong mind, because A, it's, you know, it's painful and it might, you know, hurt them, but it also might be utterly pointless, because their mind might just collapse, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, just crumble.
Yeah, and if you're the kind of Star Wars fan who gets caught up in canon of like, well, why did in A New Hope, you know, yeah, I know it was made before, but why didn't Vader just invade Leia's mind? Like, well, maybe this, maybe he knows she's got a very strong mind. And if I push her, I'll just destroy her. I won't get what I want from her, you know?
I love that. I love the thin blade there of between dark and light too, right? You know, and you can, and knowing, and even the dark side knowing that, hey, you can go too far. I like that.
Yeah, it's just such a great moment in the episode. It's on one hand, it feels so cool and powerful to see these three powerful Jedi all compelling him at the same time. And, you know, what's at stake is so moral of like, you kidnapped children to do who knows what to them. And we have to find these innocent children. But then also just seeing the pain that Cad Bane is in, even though, you know, Cad Bane is an awful dude. It's great Star Wars storytelling, I think.
Totally.
Anything that you disliked or questioned as we begin to wrap up our episode here?
They show up a lot, and they show up not just in space, but sometimes underwater. But even after all these years, I, Ken Napsok, do not like Jedi space helmets.
Is it? It's too science fiction, right?
In 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and I got nothing against that. I got nothing against Jules Verne at all. It is, and I got nothing against sci-fi. I don't know why. This one, on my rewatch, you know, you and I usually watch these each episode like once or twice, sometimes more to review them. And my second one, I was sitting down. I think I had some dinner. And I was watching and I watched that sequence. Because again, as I've said earlier, I love the sequence that it's in, the Walker landing on space. So it makes sense. I want my Jedi, and I want them on top of the Walkers. I get it. I get it, everybody. But I'm like, are they bolted down? Like, where do they grab them? Just, I get they're probably in storage, but do they seal over? And then I get lost when I normally don't get lost in the science of it all. Those bombs can drop all they want in The Last Jedi. I don't question it. I just, it's one of those things. It's like that tool belt thing. Do they just have these in some backpacks around in case they need them? I don't know.
Yeah. No, it is. The Jedi of this era are a little bit more well equipped. They have grappling hooks and they have bubble helmets.
As they should.
For space or water.
Yeah, as they should. But yeah.
As they should. But I totally get it. I think it's even just like down to an aesthetic thing of like, it's such a cool scene. And like, hey, you, Anakin, Ahsoka, you look really cool. Do you know you got a thing on your head?
Yeah.
Totally understandable. And I already criticized my beloved Obi-Wan Kenobi for going too far with his snappy banter. So that was literally the only thing I disliked or questioned in this arc. Each individual episode, it's really compelling, has its own ideas, furthers the great conversations about Anakin and Ahsoka. I forgot to mention, I love that Anakin has that very Anakin choice of let Ahsoka die or give up the holocron, and there's no hesitation. He cannot bear the idea of losing Ahsoka, you know, all sorts of great stuff that moves the Anakin and Ahsoka relationship forward. Great Jedi lore, great justice for Attack of the Clones. Just really, really love this arc. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to bring up?
No, I did. I mentioned the Kenobi Mace thing. I had kind of put that note down there. But again, just it's fun to see part of the Clone Wars animated series, what it does so well. I almost said cartoon. You could just throw me off the ship there, I guess, in my space helmet. You know, one of the big reasons is like, yeah, you know, we attack the clones, Revenge of the Sith, went a little bit of a different direction. George needed to focus more on Anakin. He makes that big decision and cuts some of the big things. And it's a reminder of just to see these two cool Jedi doing cool things together. Like, that was part of what we maybe all felt we were going to get from the prequels and didn't get as much at the time to our liking. And that reminds me of why this show is so successful and so many people love it. Is it really just expands that galaxy, expands that era. You described it as more lived in and you feel it and you feel it in moments like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point. We all hunger for more Jedi tales. We get them in Clone Wars, and we're getting them again in Light of the Jedi. So it's a good time to enjoy Jedi adventures. Ken, if you could have a action figure of any character from this episode, who would you want?
I don't think there's one, which is a question we often ask when we're doing this, because even in joking about Clone Wars figures, you'd be surprised what they have. But I'm going with Wee Dunn, which is the Rodian child. Want a little tiny Wee Dunn, maybe even a plush Wee Dunn. So cute, so adorable, and so potential. Aww.
Yeah, you could rescue Wee Dunn again and again. That'd be great. I'd love to track down a Cad Bane action figure at some point, but the the Cad Bane twist that would be fun is I would like a Cad Bane doll that you could dress up in disguise, because this is pretty rare that you get to see a bad guy dressed up as a trooper. But you got Cad Bane in clone armor disguise. You got Cad Bane in Jedi disguise. You could really have some fun just changing Cad Bane's outfits.
I love that idea. Again, one of those, like, you're not rooting for Cad Bane, but when he's got the cloak on, I'm like, that's not a bad idea there. Good job, you.
Yeah, good job. Good job, you tricksy, bad Duros. Next up, we are going to be in, you got to follow the Clone Wars chronology, because we're going to start jumping all around. We are going to Season 2, Episode 7, Bounty Hunters. This is one that I've been really, really excited to revisit. It is one of my favorite episodes of the Clone Wars, and I'm excited to discuss it with you, Ken. We always like to wrap up with our moral. What do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be, Ken?
Do not get overconfident when reviewing the Clone Wars. For sometimes you will have 3 episodes, and you will have to have patience to go through it.
Exactly. Sometimes you will have to set up your alarm early the morning that you're going to record, because you were overconfident that you would have time the day before to rewatch the episodes. That's a very good moral. Do you want to tell people where they can find Force Center?
I would love to. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod, Instagram, and YouTube as well. We're doing some rebroadcasts over there and always working on perhaps some more things for YouTube. So subscribe over there, and maybe more subscribers will give us confidence to make more happen. We are also on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. You can get some merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can try an audiobook out on us at audibletrial.com/Force Center. You can use that code Inside Editions FC35. Check out with that, and you can get a discount from us on Inside Editions and their great books. And don't forget, you can support us directly if you'd like at patreon.com/Force Center. Perhaps because of Mandalorian or us doing some work with Star Wars Explained, seeing some new people come on into the Patreon, which gets you into the Discord, and we really love having just you into our little Force Center community. It means a lot. You can go follow us on our own things, me at Ken Napsok, and my website, kennapsok.com. Joseph.
Yeah, you can follow me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out all of my other comedy adventures on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for mean old Cad Bane, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. Warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.